And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 689. The baseball season is not done yet, but it's close to ending, which means we have the postseason coming up, and that means we have a new underdog contest to talk about. So I have a special guest joining me. You might remember him from the preseason when we talked all those dingers and everything else going on in the preseason. Well, he's coming on back. You can find him on the Stacking Dingers YouTube video podcast with our buddy Sheep and Tuma and others over there. You can find him on Twitter at B3Isball. The man is a sheets wizard when it comes to underdog, and he's just really damn good at this. So his name is Chris. Chris, thanks for joining me once again, my friend.
Thank you for having me. I am so excited because I was telling you before we started that I truly love this contest more than any other that there is throughout the year. And I feel like we're getting better at drafting it, but there are ways that we can still find an edge. And I think we are here to ask some questions and see what answers we can get.
Yep, we're here to pick your brain. Like, I got that one listener question, which we already pretty much have all that covered on the outline and what we're going to do today. But we're going to have a lot of fun with this. Before we get started, I'm just going to get this out there out of the way. How many of these are you doing, Chris?
I have, I'm not doing any more because I did my 150 already.
Oh, the slow drafts ended already?
So because it's a playoff contest, they actually don't do any slow drafts.
Oh.
So I did 150 fast drafts.
Good Lord.
Over about 4 days. Yeah. Good Lord is right. So the contest opened on a Friday morning, and I had anticipated that it would be around then. So I'm located in Toronto. So I took a trip down to Niagara on Saturday and didn't see the falls, just went over the border. Thanks to the good people at Underdog, because now they have a feature where you can just punch in the number of drafts you want to enter and then hit enter, and it does it automatically for you. Otherwise, you'd have to click 150 times. So I did that. Border guard asked where I was going and why, and I was honest with him. He laughed, said good luck, sent me on my way. And then I spent the next 4 days basically just drafting, setting up queues for drafting, more drafting. And by the end, I was very tired and very ready to be done. But now I'm past that. I've been cleansed. I've distanced myself from that part of the process. And now we're here to talk and share and see what happens.
So you're all done. You're locked and loaded, because as far as I'm aware, there's really only one main playoff contest for now. Yeah, I must have missed that briefly, that there was no slows, because I remember when we talked before, and I remember hearing you on your other show, Stacking Dingers, saying you went across the border, and you had to do that in the past because you're in Toronto, and but you used to do a bunch of slow drafts, and you're the one that got me starting to do slow drafts. I'm like, that's actually works. You can kind of sit back and kind of game plan and perfect your stacks and whatnot and see where it goes. I did not realize with the pennants you can't do that. Makes sense, but it is interesting. So, all right. So the pennant, it is a $10 tournament. As you can tell, max is 150 entries, if you're curious on that one. We'll start kind of with the basics here. How many teams are in this? Because like the dinger and stuff, it was 10 teams and it was a 20 player rosters and stuff along those lines. How are we, how many teams, how many rounds of the draft, aka spots on a roster, are we looking at?
So we're working with 6-person drafts. So they fill relatively quickly and they move quickly because you're doing a 6-person draft only for 12 rounds. So it's 72 picks per draft. I would say that on average, your like regular draft in one of these, once it gets filled, is going to be 15, 20 minutes tops kind of. So they move pretty quick. And it's a smaller format than the regular season long stuff, which I think makes sense for a playoff contest.
No, I love it. And those small ones are fun, because I've done that like with just like a daily baseball one. They're usually like, you know, anywhere from 3 to 6 or give or take. Like when I do golf, weekly golf, it's literally six teams. And about, I think it might only be 10 picks per team there. And they go fast. Like you're just sitting there, just go, go, go. And it's fun. And you, all of a sudden you realize you got 20 teams before you blink an eye. And here we are. But that'll make it fun for the playoffs. Now, the scoring, is it the same as the regular season, or do things change because of the reduced rosters technically?
Exact same scoring. So that is nice. It's nice and consistent. Nothing different on the scoring front from an underdog perspective.
Okay, so we got 12 rounds, a 12-player roster, 72 picks, scoring is the same. Anything else of significance with the contest by itself before we shift our focus into more of the strategy aspect of this? Because we'll get into there's only X amount of playoff teams, X amount of roster spots, so on and so forth. But anything else like by the contest? Right now, it's as we record, as our loaded underdog. It's 32% filled right now, and it starts on October 1st, so that will fill beforehand. But anything else on this one?
Yeah, so I want to point out two things. One is about the payout structure, and then one is going to be kind of the advancement structure. So this tournament historically has been, it's been one of the more top-heavy tournaments they have on Underdog. It's 100,000 guaranteed prize pool total. And historically, the winner had got 15, and then that kind of trickled on down through the final, and you had very little from advancing out of the first round. And even into the, like, if you came kind of, if you just missed the final, you still really didn't make much money back. And you would get $100 for making the final last year. So that was kind of the way that I thought about it was, you know, you get 10 times the money for making the final, and the top prize is up to 15,000. This year, they've made it a little bit flatter in the final, and they've made it a little more tolerable. So if you're in the final, but you don't, you know, miss out by too much, it's flatter throughout. So it's 10K up top, and it's kind of a little more gradual of a decline. And we're going to get into this when we talk strategy, but this is still very much a tournament that you want to build for first place. But now I think this year you have a little more room to play with just making, if you make that final, you can hit some outs to, you know, still having a good payday. Whereas last year it was like 15K to first, I think 10th was like $500. So it was really like a drop off once you get there. Yeah, and then the other thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. The other thing that I want to hit on is just the advancement structure. So we're in our 6-person group to start with that we draft with. Only one of those 6 teams is going to make it out of the first round, which consists of the wild card and the divisional round put together. So you've got 2 series that kind of form one round. Then you've got your CSs, so ALCS, NLCS is round 2. You get put into another 6-person group, and only one person advances out of that as well. So we're working with 2 very small groups where you have to come first. And then if you do that in the first 2 rounds, you make the World Series. There's 312 teams in the final. So essentially, we're building these teams to try and come first in a series-long contest with only 310 teams out of 11,000. So you're kind of building for this very small percentage outcome, and you're trying to win on the margins when you get to that final.
That's pretty wild. Like, that makes sense. Like, you need to stay in the 6-man little brackets, 16 brackets, but go from 6 to 6 to 312. Like, you're going from this like little pond to this big ocean in the end to try to win it all, and hopefully have the World Series teams to top it off. So that makes it a ton of fun as well. All right, let's get to the part where everyone loves, and that's the drafting aspect of this. Obviously, building these teams using our different ideas and ways about it, trying to use our crystal balls or magic eight balls or whatever you have to use here. So scoring is the same. You have 12 players on your roster. Let's just start with the basics here. How do you break it down for hitting and pitching? So I remember it was something like you wanted 6 or 7 pitchers in a 20-man, give or take. How are we looking on the 12-man roster?
So on the 12-man roster, the kind of one thing to note here is you have your 12-person draft. You're starting 7 of those 12. The breakdown of those 7, though, is different than your like season-long contest, where season-long, it's very balanced. It's kind of 3-3, 3-3-4, 3-3-4-3 kind of thing. Here, you get 3 pitchers out of your 7. Then you need 1 infielder, 1 outfielder, and 2 flex. So those are any other hitters. So out of the 7, your 3 pitchers make up kind of a higher percentage of your starters than your season-long team. So in season-long, I'm a big fan of 6 or 7 pitchers in total. In this contest, I drafted a lot of 5-pitcher teams and some 4-pitcher teams. I think those are kind of the 2 ways that I would end up with my team. And I probably finished with, I can check here, I think I finished with like 75% 5-pitcher teams and 25% 4-pitcher teams. So that was kind of my internal breakdown, just based on pitchers score a lot when they pitch, if you have the right starters. And so if you have 3 spots to start pitchers in and you have only 4 pitchers total, that doesn't give you as much leeway. So I liked the kind of additional security of having that 5th pitcher to try and get that extra start in there and really like boost the front end of your team, because pitchers do matter more here in this contest.
And it might make it easier, because in like previous contests, you had to be diligent of infielders and outfielders, like you said. So you don't really have to break it down as much. You almost just can go like two infielders and all outfielders if you wanted or whatever, and kind of differentiate out of those seven hitting positions where you can maybe be. I know we've talked different strategies in the regular season when it came to pitching. It was like, you know, punt pitching or go get a couple A's. Like there's a bunch of different strategies, obviously, in the season long. When you're looking at this, you're kind of wanting, it sounds like, more dominant pitchers, especially when we'll get to different teams' aspects here. But some of these teams don't even use a lot of starters to begin with, or they have shorter rotations or all these different philosophies that kind of mix things up there. But so for now, you got five pitchers, seven hitters, give or take. That's kind of the deal there. Now, when you're drafting, are you, I know you want the good pitchers, you're saying, are you being more aggressive early, or do you, is it depends on what teams you're going for?
Depends on what teams. I would say that the kind of supply and demand within these drafts is, on a given night, your MLB team is going to have one pitcher and that's worth point, like that can actually score meaningful points, and nine hitters. So on these teams, and usually now we just know that kind of the dynamics of playoff baseball are teams have shorter rotations, teams have shorter leashes game to game, teams are more aggressive with their relievers. So I did put like an increased emphasis on starters that have security, both in their actual spot in the rotation and in the innings that they'll throw game to game. And there's some teams that you can kind of tell they have, you know, one, two, three, and like, these are the guys and they're going to be out there in the rotation. And there's some teams where it's like, it could be one of six guys and like, they're going to mix and match. They're going to do all sorts of things. So if you have a team where it's like a defined rotation and safe starters, I was willing to reach on those and lock those spots down, because you can kind of get into trouble if you get boxed out of pitching. Where with hitters, there's always kind of another guy that you can take. And we know that in, if you think about a daily contest, the amount of times that a six hitter, a seven hitter, eight hitter, somebody hits a home run, that's 14 points right away in the scoring system. Like that, you can leapfrog pretty easily like that on like small kind of events. Whereas pitchers, you need the innings to accumulate the points that you need. So there's a limited supply of those. So I did put a little bit of emphasis on securing the pitchers from the teams that I wanted to corner in a draft.
Now, I want to ask this question because I'm pretty sure I know the answers in scoring is the same. But and again, this can be a team by team thing as well. Is there any interest in a closer? Because closers get used for multiple innings in the postseason and stuff along those lines. And I know if they're not getting the win or whatever, it's probably not applicable. But again, if we're trying to go all in on specific teams, does a closer come into play?
I would say no. And I think you hit it. It's basically the wins and the quality starts are really valuable in this format. And you would need your closer to have kind of like, let's say your starter gets one good start in during the series. That's like anywhere between maybe five and seven innings. You need that closer to get close to that, probably with high strikeouts and not letting in any earned runs. So it could happen in a series where things get chaotic. Maybe there's no starters with like quality enough innings to make it matter. But I would say in general, relievers are out. We want starters. The only maybe exception that I would throw out there is, on some of these teams with less defined rotations, and you know that there are a bunch of guys that could go two or three or four innings, get mix and match together, you could have someone who is a long guy out of somebody's bullpen who ends up being the pitcher that throws like the third most innings in a series. And that person can be valuable. So that is a situation that I would be accepting, not like going out of my way to do, but as a fallback, like that I think is viable.
Like if someone else starts taking your starting pitchers because they don't understand the system we're trying to work here.
Exactly. Say,
okay, at the end, we're going to jump in, because that's the best part. We'll start talking about targeting teams here in a second. But is there anything else strategy-wise on just picking hitters and pitchers that we haven't really talked about? I know, again, it'll vary team by team.
Nothing off the top of my head. I think once we get to kind of the whole picture of what you want your team to look like, you start to fill in the gaps about hitters, pitchers, and everything else.
All right, so we'll start targeting teams here. Some teams are starting to clinch playoff berths already. The Dodgers actually did on Thursday as we're recording, as Shohei Ohtani is just a god amongst men out there today. My God, that was ridiculous. We're looking at the postseason now, and everyone knows you have three division winners. You have a couple wild card spots. So you're going to have teams getting byes. You're going to have some teams maybe only playing a couple games and being gone. I know on your sheet here, it's pretty awesome. You have like the playoff format, you have the playoff picture, with different teams involved, like the Dodgers, Phillies, Padres, Milwaukee are pretty much locked into the postseason right now. But the Mets, D-backs, and Braves are hanging on. It looks like it's Mets, D-backs, but the Braves have a shot still. And on the AL, it's the Yankees, the Astros, the Guardians, the Orioles. They're pretty much locked in already. And then the Royals, Twins, and Tigers. It looks like it's going to be Royals, Twins, but there's still some wiggle room. Tigers like a game out. So some moving and shaking taking place there. So looking at this, because you've already finished your drafts, and again, I said they're still moving and shaking, and not even all the buys are technically locked in yet. How do you go about kind of looking at the playoff picture to help decide how you want to approach these pennant drafts?
So I think the kind of key crystallizing strategy for me is that when I kind of realized that the end goal of this is, you know, coming first out of 11,000 people, which means coming first out of this 300 person group in the World Series, and realizing that you have 12 roster spots to play with during your draft, you need all 12 of those players to be in the World Series to have a chance to come first. So when I say that, when I kind of said it out loud for the first time and saw some other smart people doing this, I was like, oh, okay, this makes sense. So I need 12 people playing in the World Series that are scoring points, which means that I'm limiting myself to drafting only two teams within like my draft. I'm going to take players from an AL team and I'm going to take players from an NL team. And I'm going to be making a bet on that World Series matchup happening for this draft to be, you know, worthwhile in the end. And we tried this 2 years ago. It was not as common. Last year it got more popular, and we kind of got the perfect example World Series last year for why this is powerful. Because if you think back to this point last year, Texas was in but had just lost their division, and they were out of a bye. They were going to be this wild card team that had a great regular season but kind of cooled off at the end. Arizona was very much on the fringes and got hot late and snuck in, became the sixth seed pretty late into this process. And so they were, I would say, for most of the drafting window, not very drafted. And they kind of got drafted near the end once things crystallized. But out of those 11,000 teams, Underdog, one of the amazing things they do is they put up the data from like last year's drafts. So I went and checked and I said, how many people out of those 11,000 teams took a full Texas versus Arizona World Series? So all 12 players, just Texas, just Arizona, like that's it. There were only 18 teams out of all 11,000. So right there, it's kind of some instant leverage. You got 18 teams. They didn't score very well in the first round. Like their Philly put up a ton of points. Texas and Arizona were okay. They advanced, but like nothing great. So 18 teams goes down to 10. So you get 10 teams into the second round that have this full perfect Texas Arizona stack. Same thing in the ALCS, NLCS. Houston scored a bunch of points. Philly scored a bunch of points. So a lot of those dead teams moved on to the World Series as well. And so of the 10 Texas Arizona like perfect stacks, only 5 made it to the World Series. So we got 5 in this final of 300 and something teams. Can you guess where those 5 teams finished in the final?
Well, I heard your answer discussing this already. So I'm guessing very well is what I'm going to say for this.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like they locked up. I think it's like half the money is basically tied up in those spots, so like 40% of the money. So going into the World Series, those 5 teams were basically only playing against each other for all the big money. And that is the perfect outcome. Like you'd love to be one of those 5 teams where you have kind of, you cornered this outcome. And the only way to access that is by drafting these full like 12 person, 2 team stacks. And so that is what I tried to do almost exclusively. There's a couple I screwed up because I fell asleep or clicked the wrong person or did something. But in a perfect world, I'm only drafting 2 teams and trying to build these World Series winning teams.
No, and that makes a ton of sense. Now, it's a shame for the 13 teams that didn't advance because, like you said, I think like Arizona swept the Brewers in the first round, and you have the Phillies went 5. So it's like things like that where they get those extra games. So it gets them to the next round, which hurts your team to survive in advance. That's why it's even more challenging that the first 2 rounds only 1 advance out of the 6. Like it's almost, could you put us in a team of 12, like 2 advance or something, 3 advance and give us a shot? But because I bet you more of those probably move in the right direction. But that's the fun part, because you know as well as most do that a lot of people are going to walk in and go, I want the Yankees. I want the Dodgers. I want, they're just going to go flat out to that. And obviously last year is the perfect storm. As you mentioned, that's like where my brain goes, okay, which guys are the 3-4 seeds or even five? Like that's where my brain would immediately go, or, you know, that's the DFS mindset is I might lose. I might get smoked in round one. That's just the reality of the situation. But there's that chance that if things work out, I am just sitting on an island by myself and things are great. That's kind of the
just scenario. Need one.
Yeah, you exactly. That's one. All it is. So it's almost like, tell me, I know where your strategy is in this because you want to win it all, but you did 150, so you can spread out the wealth. Say someone does like 10 and they want to make sure they leave with money. Is there like a different, I mean, we'll get back to this two-team approach. Is there an angle where you say, hey, go take like three teams, split it up, you'll get to the end in cash? Like, is if that's what you want, is there an angle for just like the average listener that goes, hey, I want to turn $10 into like $20 or something? And I know that's probably not the ideal, you probably shouldn't be in the tournament, but at the same time, it's the only playoff tournament, so they want to have some fun. So
exactly.
And is that an angle to go with?
So for that person, what I would recommend is the payout structure does kind of benefit you this year. So right now you put your $10 in. To double your money, you have to win your first pod and then come second or first in your second pod. So essentially, if you make the final, you get, you know, a bunch of money relative to what you put in. Or if you just miss out on the final, you get double your money. So $20 from 10. Last year, that same person that won their first pod and then lost the second one, came second place, you only got 14 off of your $10. So they've made this a little bit kind of more palatable for those that just kind of get bounced right near the end. But I think you nailed it on the head. So in that case, what I would do is I would go to a third team and I would make sure that you're balancing kind of, if you take a buy team, you want some wild card pitchers from the other side. I don't think you go to four teams because I think then that gets really dicey just in terms of how many you actually get to at the end. But what I would say is if you really want that kind of third team going in, I would pick an AL team, for example, as your kind of main team. Like, this is the team I think is going to go to the World Series and win. So let's say that's Houston. I would take 7 Houston Astros and I would spread out those Astros so that you can at least fill out a starting lineup in the World Series. So I would take 3 pitchers. I would take an infielder, an outfielder, and 2 other hitters. So if Houston makes it to the World Series, you can at the very least, you know, field a team. With the other kind of 5 spots that are left, I would take 3 from 1 NL team. So maybe a pitcher and 2 hitters, you know, pick a wild card team. Let's say it's Arizona. Like, you know, you take Gallen and Corbin Carroll and Ketel Marte. And then there's your kind of group of 3. So if you get, you know, an Arizona-Houston final, you got now 7 plus 3. You have kind of a pretty good squad. If they make the ALCS, NLCS, like same thing. You got 10 there. Like you're set up really well. And then to kind of boost that first round advance maybe, or give yourself another out to, you know, a finals team that could work, I would pick 2 from a second NL team, maybe another wildcard team. Preferably, if you know like the standings at the end, preferably not the team that Arizona is playing, so you don't kind of cancel yourself out immediately. But maybe if Arizona comes 6th, you want to take one of those, like the 4 or the 5. So whoever that is right now, the Padres,
yeah, are probably the 4. By the Padres, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe you grab a Padres pitcher and a Padres hitter. The Padres hitters are getting more expensive, but not crazy. So like you could grab somebody in the middle rounds and then you have your 2 Padres to, you get a start, you get maybe a homer, you get a steal, something happens. You have kind of a high floor with some upside built into, if they make the World Series, you're probably not winning first, but maybe you're not min cashing. Maybe you're coming like, you know, 20th out of 300. Like that is still on the table, I think.
No, that's cool. And I think I just wanted to get an angle out there because, you know, I might build like 2 or 3 just to have fun like that. But most of mine are going to be like, hey, I want 2 teams. I want to, you know, go for the whole shebang. But I do think there's a lot of, I think the idea that I've talked to some other guys, let's get casual players to enjoy this. Like, let's have a shot to have some fun. And you never know. That's how I started DFS and I hit a couple and it was awesome. And I play like an idiot now. So it's fun. And Underdog's awesome, as you know, as you do all this work. So I was trying to get that angle across there. Now, like you have different, again, I'm going to share this sheet on Twitter Chris already has it all over Twitter if you haven't seen it yet, but he's got all these tabs on it. It's amazing what he's done with this. He's got like a World Series grid, like this team versus this team, the odds, so on and so forth. Now, when you're building your lineups, how are you deciding your teams you're trying to attack as you build? Because one other thing, when people look at these sheets, Chris even has an AL teams page and an NL teams page with the ADPs of the raw. Like, it's more stuff than you're ever going to want. It's amazing. Like, just spend a half an hour looking at this. It's so cool. So when you're building your teams, how are you approaching it? I know you're picking one AL, NL, obviously, but you also don't want to just take the captain obvious picks, because most other guys do that, and that makes it kind of difficult to probably draft these teams as well.
Correct. So when I think of, so you got your kind of AL and your NL, that's like one kind of dimension you're drafting on. The other one that I think of is buy versus not a buy. The thing that's really hard with this is the teams that get the buy are the most likely to make it to the World Series, because they have, they're A, better. They probably play better in the regular season to earn that buy. And B, they have one less round to survive. So they are your most likely teams, but also the teams that are the most disadvantaged in round one, because they don't get that extra series. So the first kind of thing that I avoid is matching two teams that are both going to be on bye. I think that is kind of a tough way to go about it, because you're losing kind of a lot of floor right off the hop. And one of these years, we're going to get a kind of one seed versus one seed World Series. And the strategy is then going to be kind of out the window. And we're going to get like kind of a mishmashy, chaotic World Series, chaotic tournament result. This happened the year that the Chiefs and the Eagles played in the Super Bowl. So Underdog also does a very similar NFL contest. And that year that the Chiefs and the Eagles were in the Super Bowl as the one seeds, the finals leaderboard was insane. It was like, I think you drafted 12 players as well, and the winning team only had like four or five players playing in the Super Bowl. Jeez. because it was just so hard to advance Chiefs and Eagles together and get the points at the end. So one of these years that's going to happen. I'm just hoping that it doesn't happen to me this year. So when I start, I say, okay, no buy versus buy, but I'll do buy versus no buy, or no buy versus no buy. And so from there, that kind of narrows down my combinations of teams that I'm going to draft together. And then I started just essentially picking kind of, you know, I like the Orioles. Okay, let's take an Orioles team and let's match them with the Padres. Let's match them with the Diamondbacks. Let's match them with the Brewers. And then I'd move on to the Astros and kind of like make my way through the lists like that.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense, especially doing as many, get a little piece of all the pies. So that totally checks out. Now, when you're doing the 12 players on your team, I doubt you're doing a straight 6-6 split, but maybe you are. How are you approaching dividing and conquering with these? Like, because, you know, you said some are on a bye and some aren't. So maybe the ones that aren't, do you want to have an extra player there type thing to get through the first round? Just some ideas going through my head.
That is a great question, because last year going into drafts, I was on this two team kind of fix, and I was drafting a lot of those 6-6 teams thinking, okay, this is a nice balance. I have like, you know, a bit of each, a bit of that. When I did my look back on how I did personally, and I'm going to do this for kind of the whole set of teams now that we have the data, but what I found in my own teams is my 6-6 teams did really bad. And I lost, I had three or four teams that made the finals, and a couple of them were 6-6 teams where I lost half of the team in the NLCS. I had a lot of Texas Philly or Houston Philly kind of things. So I had a team that had 6 Texas and 6 Philly, and that team in the World Series doesn't have a full lineup, so it couldn't kind of compete with the other full Texas teams. So I've shied away from doing 6-6, and I have a couple of those where, again, fell asleep, clicked wrong, but I ended up with 60% of my teams being 7-5. So whichever team I think is going to, you know, go farthest, you know, 7, and then 5 is kind of the bring back, like you would kind of think about in DFS. And then what I wanted to do more of this year is, because I saw this in the final a couple times, is that there were a bunch of Texas teams that had 8 and even 9 people.
I was wondering. Yeah.
And so I tried to take more of those this year. So I have about 25% of my teams as 8-4, and then a handful of even 9-3, just kind of where some drafts got off the rails. And instead of go in somewhere else, I just kept clicking. I think I have a couple of Astros teams where I have like, you know, six hitters and three pitchers, a couple of Orioles teams. So I am leaning more in the let's be aggressive and kind of split up my teams and kind of stay away from that balanced approach this year.
Yeah, that's kind of where my head was going. It's like you want to almost dominate a section of the thing. Like if you think this team's that good, you want to crush it, because it's even just, you know, like I know we keep reverting back to last year, but say you had like a 9-man Phillies team with three Rangers, you're easily getting to the finals. And yeah, you're going to struggle now with three Rangers. That's going to be really rough. But at the same token, like you had no issue getting to the finals, which, you know, for some people that might be all you want, but say you did 9 Rangers and 3 Phillies, my goodness, like you could have taken it down, honestly, if compared to those, like that would have been a fun one to see how that played out, because they could have dominated the way the Rangers, you know, if you had Adelise and company on there.
Exactly. Especially like if you end up with a World Series that's a sweep or a 5-game series, like we don't know what that could look like. That could be really weird. Like we could get a blowout World Series and then it's just like, oh, maybe you needed like 8 Rangers there to make it work for you.
Yeah, so I think it's fun to talk about, because I think people in all types of best ball, whatever leagues or fantasy you're playing, they try to stay so structured on what they're doing. I think trying to take some risk and be a little different goes a long way in these. And I think the idea of if people just sit back and just think of the concept of, hey, if I have 9 guys from this team and I only have to field 7 for a week. And like you said, when they take your best 7 point scorers, they can all be from the same team, right? They don't have to be from some other team. So that does make it quite interesting there. Anything else when you're thinking of team builds? We'll talk team specific here in a minute with some of these, like maybe certain players or targets or ideas you're looking at on rosters, but anything else on team builds that stands out to you?
So I think the last point that I would hit is a similar vein to like willing to, you know, experiment and be a little more aggressive with getting 8 or 9 from the same team is when you're thinking positionally, I'm on certain teams, I was comfortable with leaving the draft with only 2 infielders or 2 outfielders total. And there's, you know, certain teams where the 2 best hitters are infielders or the 2 best hitters are outfielders. And then everything else kind of just falls into place the rest of the way. So if you feel like you have like a, you know, you hit your, let's say you're picking a Royals Phillies World Series and you go Bobby Witt, Bryce Harper, and those are your 2 infielders, like I'm content. Like if the rest of the draft kind of falls to me where I take a bunch of pitchers and a bunch of outfielders and I leave with just those 2 guys, I'm good. Like I'm okay with that. So just, you know, being comfortable drafting a little bit uncomfortably and unbalanced, when you need to, and we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, staying in your lane and how the drafting kind of works, but there always happens where something kind of goes not according to plan and you have to be willing to adjust. And I was comfortable leaving with 2 of a position, of a hitter position, if I needed to.
Yeah, I feel like it's not me being cocky or anything, but I feel like I know the player pool well enough that if someone wants to come and kind of quote unquote snipe me on a strategy, like I know the depth of teams, like you said, and in a postseason, especially if there's good pitching, there's usually not a lot of offense to begin with. Exactly. So when you're taking a 7th guy in a lineup, if it's in a World Series team, it's probably a good lineup. It's not going to crush you as much as, you know, on a daily, you know, you're doing a daily underdog and you need one of those studs. It's going to drive in all your, it's a totally different animal when you're talking postseason baseball here. So I don't need you to give away everything you did, because you probably still want to keep that little behind the curtain for other people still drafting. Totally cool with that. But just for fun, did you see yourself focused more on elite starting pitchers, or were you more so? I know, again, team by team, I get it. But did you find yourself taking more starting pitchers? Or if you want to reveal what teams you're focused on, you're more than welcome to. But I know you don't have to give away all your secrets.
Oh yeah, for sure. So I think I tweeted this out when I got to 125, and it was kind of like here's what I got to my team wise. And at 150, I can't remember if I sent it out publicly or not, but my drafting season's over, so it's done for me. I'm good now. So I ended up in the AL very heavy on Baltimore and Houston. Okay. So out of my 150 teams, I have 80 of those 150 are either Baltimore or Houston. So when I opened up kind of the draft the first time, I looked at the ADP, and Baltimore to me really stood out as the most underpriced team. Since then, they are just a terrible, terrible team. They can't hit anything anymore. And they are really like, the division is finished. Like that dream kind of died. But The one kind of upside here is that now they aren't getting a bye. So I have the chance at them being kind of, you know, this year's Philly, where they could be the good, you know, bye or a good wildcard team, or Texas. This is what Texas did last year. They faded down the stretch and then turned it back on. So that's my hope with Baltimore. And we have kind of seen that their ADPs have steadily kind of climbed. So when I started drafting, Gunnar Henderson was the first Oriole off the board most of the time. And he was going like 15th, 16th overall. Now, I think at the latest check, his ADP is like 5. So as people are, you know, kind of taking them higher and higher, you have to kind of be aware that that's what's happening. So that's kind of where my head was at in the AL. I really did not find myself taking many Yankees teams. I only ended up with 12 or 13. Wow. And those were kind of ones where like Judge fell to me, where people did other things, or Soto fell to me, and I just kind of backed into those teams. I found it very hard to leave drafts comfortable with like this big Yankees team that I had. So I kind of just parked my tickets elsewhere and left the Yankees to be. In the NL, similar idea with the Dodgers. Very hard to kind of match up all of their good players together. So I only ended up with 15 of those teams as well, the Dodgers. And then I kind of split my chips in the NL across Philly, San Diego, and Arizona. So I drafted, it looks like I had, wow, this is very symmetrical. I drafted exactly 30 of each of those teams.
There you go.
So, you know, round numbers. But I kind of feel like the NL is a little more open for some of these wildcard teams. And Arizona, to me, kind of stands out as the, I think it was Eno a week or two ago on Rates and Barrels said last year they were lucky. This year they're just really good. And I think that's the case. Like they are the best hitting team in baseball since July 1st or June 1st. Like they are truly an offensive juggernaut. And I think they have the pitching now that guys are getting healthy to like really kind of shape up for the playoffs. So if I had to like, if I was drafting still, I would wish that I could take more Arizona, even though they're kind of like sliding around in the wild card race. I think if that's a team that if they get in, they can do damage.
And I'm looking at these ADPs for Arizona. That's tasty. Like there's, it's not overpriced by any means. And it, you know, when you said San Diego, Philadelphia, and Arizona, teams that, you know, Phillies will have a bye, obviously. San Diego, Arizona shouldn't have a bye. The Dodgers will have that. And those are three teams that all have good pitching, at least three good pitchers. So you can kind of, like, on those teams, did you load up on their starters first and worry about bats, like, with the Orioles? Because the Orioles, it's like, it's Burns, then some guys you can get late. They're not horrible pitchers. But, like, an Orioles rotation, maybe I'm just – it's my brain. You look at some of these guys, and I could see them getting yanked in the third inning a lot just because of who they are, where the D-backs, you know, Gallen and company, if – they should be going five most like we saw what Fott did in the postseason last year. My God, that was amazing. But in my brain, I'm thinking, okay, these NL teams that you mentioned, I want starting pitching. Orioles, I'll take the bats. And of course, I'll fill in with hit batters, but maybe deeper batters on these NL teams.
Agreed. So I think you kind of have to, you know, like you said, you know the player pool and you think about where are the strengths of this team and where are the weaknesses? Like where can I wait and where can I reach? The other thing that I'll point out is that, you know, we're very value focused. Like when you're in your like season long drafts and you're underdog, you're at FBC or anything, you're kind of, you have this ADP number that is relatively efficient because other smart people are doing a lot of drafts and putting their money behind making these numbers, you know, putting their money behind these numbers. In the playoffs, ADP doesn't matter to me. It really only matters so that you can predict what other people are going to do in the draft. And so that, you know, like roughly the order of the players on the team that you want to take. But I like, you know, there's drafts where you can take a guy in the first round with an ADP in the 50s. Like it does not matter. And then you've kind of planted your flag on that team and you've signaled to everybody else in the draft that like, hey, I'm drafting Diamondbacks. Like if you want to get into the shooting match with me about who's going to get the third Diamondback starter, like we can go. But otherwise people kind of see that and they want to do something else. So don't be afraid to jump around an ADP and like really reach, because I don't think that it's as kind of predictive and as efficient as you would find in a regular season contest.
And you mentioned earlier staying in your lane, and you're referencing there is like you're focused on these two teams. You need other people to stay in their lane and focus on their two teams. And we can all be one happy family when this is all said and done and see who actually wins with the right strategy here. Now you've also mentioned how, like, especially if you all of a sudden have three teams now, it's because you started and someone jumped in and made you kind of pivot here. How often did that happen in your 150? Like y'all don't have to have exact number if you don't have it, but just like how many times did people not stay in their lanes per se?
Almost every draft. Like, there'll be at least one to two people that would kind of be, you know, hitting the board all over the place, doing kind of their own thing. It was something that last year really stressed me out, when people would like start jumping around. And then it was like, okay, do I jump to a third team? Like, what do I do here? Do I really like think about it? And one of my takeaways from last year was essentially not to panic during the drafts when people start doing that. And if they want to kind of, you know, take some players away from your team, that's okay. As long as that team has enough players, you can fill out like a reasonable lineup. Because I also found that last year, I drafted some duplicate teams. So of some of these I call them uncompetitive drafts, when I'm taking the ugly teams, like if I'm taking a 6 seed versus a 6 seed kind of thing, or a 5 versus a 5, when I know that there is going to be like no competition for my players, I took, you know, the top 7, what's a good example this year, the top 7 Mets and then the top 5 Royals. Like, you could do that every draft and everything until the end of this tournament, and you probably wouldn't have anyone jumping in your way to take somebody else. If that happened to me last year, I would have considered kind of jumping over to a third team and saying, okay, how can I get the best player from another team? What I kind of realized after last year and heading into this year is that if somebody wants to like one off jump into your lane or two off jump into your lane, what that can afford you is it gives you a little bit of natural diversification. So you end up, you know, not taking the same 6 or 7 guys from a team. Because I definitely got anchored to like, these are the 3 best pitchers. These are the 4 best hitters. I'm taking those guys a lot. Anything can happen in a series. Like last year, I think Jordan was not good in the first round. Yep. And then he caught fire in the second round. So it's like, okay, if you have a Houston team without him, maybe you're good in the first round. Then maybe you needed him later. So sometimes it's okay to not have everybody from a team. And once I kind of learned to embrace that a little bit this year, I think it really helped shape the rest of my drafts, because I just focused on, all right, I'm just going to keep taking these two teams. I'm going to get some different players in there. I'm going to mix in some bad players or some guys that, you know, maybe don't get to play all the time, but they could in the playoffs. People get hurt. People get benched. Like, things happen all the time. And I wanted to build in a little more upside, a little more anti-fragility when things kind of don't break my way.
That's a great point to diversify that way, because it also might make you take someone sooner on the other roster that would not have been available, or so on, or maybe go an extra player on that team instead of the other way around. And yeah, no, I like that a lot. It actually makes a ton of sense to me to diversify that way, because I was joking around, 150 teams or 150 drafts with only a select set of teams. That was before I knew like how focused you were on certain teams. Like, how do you not duplicate? Like, exactly. Like, you probably will on accident, or you fell asleep. Like, it's probably something that just happened, but to like not do it a lot, because like even when I was doing the bunts or the dingers, I've always had drafts going on.
Yeah,
you do get anchored in to like the, like if you're pick 6 in this draft, like you're getting anchored into a certain region of what's going on in the draft. So I know exactly what you're saying now, and I wish I would have diversified more, because I had a whole lot of Atlanta Braves. Oof. So that did not go so well this year, but I know I'm not alone on that.
I got one more point on duplication, because it does seem like, you know, you really don't want to, like, in a DFS contest, you wouldn't want to, you know, you wouldn't want to dupe yourself. Yeah. Like, that is a way to just, you know, you're cutting your equity kind of right down the middle, where it's a 1 week thing where everybody is playing for the same thing. In this contest where you are advancing in stages, it's not the end of the world if you dupe yourself maybe 2 or 3 times, because pod luck is a thing in these drafts. And you can have wildly different winning scores from, you know, round to round, from group to group. So if you have 3 teams that are roughly the same, and, you know, maybe it's a high scoring, but not a crazy high scoring team in that first round, and 2 of those teams get axed, but the 3rd makes it through, and then that is all the players you need kind of after that. That's one way to not stress yourself out too much over duplication. Like I would say, don't go drafting, you know, 5 or 10 of the exact same teams. But if you do it, you know, like you said, by accident once or twice, like I think that's okay. And then you're kind of, those are players that you like and you want to have. So you have a little more, you know, you could get one of those teams to the end when maybe you wouldn't have, if, you know, luck didn't break your way. So it's just another way to kind of leverage some knowledge and some things that you might have an edge on the field with.
That's a great point, because even in the season longs, like getting into like the second round and then seeing the different scores just to win,
yep.
Some that are just insane compared to other leagues you're in. I'm like, my God, like, why can I be in here? So that's actually a very, very good point. Is it's all about surviving and advancing and hoping you're in the right spot, basically.
You want to be in the AL Central of divisions, not the, you know, yes. Whatever not the AL Central is.
AL Central, that's a great point. Not in the, yeah, let's see, what is the one? In the AL West, I guess, with the Astros? I don't know.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so I think we covered building rosters. Like, I wasn't going to go over every team's roster. That's just, people can do that on their own time. They can look at your sheet for that. So we have different roster constructions, different ways of building with two teams, kind of focusing on AL, NL, bye weeks. So, like, in the end, you're kind of looking at 7-5 builds, 8-4 builds. Now, we kind of said it, but do you prefer to have you're taking one team with a bye, one team without a bye, kind of, not all the time, but that's kind of the goal. If you do that scenario, do you want your team without the bye to have the more players? I mean, with the bye to have the more players?
It depends. That is really a decision that I would make, you know, depending on how the draft breaks. Okay. A lot of times I found that, like, so if we look at our four, I'm just going to call them the bye teams because they're going to get the byes in almost every scenario here. The Yankees are very competitive. Like, people were drafting the Yankees aggressively. Dodgers and Phillies, same thing. Like, those three teams, if you ended up with a room that was just going to let you take all of those players, like, that was kind of a once in a draft season room. And I ended up in, I think, one of those for each, the Yankees and the Dodgers. But, you know, that just happens over 150 drafts. Those rooms, you can kind of let the room dictate if you're going to go heavy on the bye team or not the bye team. If somebody jumps in and takes one other Yankee and then you can, you know, slide in and take the next six, like, that is fine. Then you can kind of keep going with Yankees. But if somebody else comes in and says, I'm taking one Yankee and then another and another and another, then maybe that's your signal to, like, okay, now I have my small side on the NL. That's going to become my big side now. And then you can tack on, you know, a couple of cheap pieces late. So I would say room to room, use your judgment and kind of let the draft dictate it for you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense as well. I know we probably missed something. Is there anything else that stands out to you? I know we hit on all of it, and I'm not kidding people. I know you guys should have seen this by now. I joked with Chris. I'm like, if people know who Chris is, who they should, if they're playing underdog, you've probably seen the sheet. Like, I keep scanning through. I've looked at it a dozen times already. I keep scanning through it while we're on the pod, and I'm finding more stuff in this thing. There's tons of information. Is there anything else that we could highlight for the listeners to help them at least enjoy / maybe succeed in the pennant?
So today is the 19th of September and the playoffs start October 1st, I think, is kind of the first day, or like when the drafts end, like, that's kind of when things wrap up. So we have less than 2 weeks to go. With a week out, we're going to start to get more certainty on teams that are in, teams that are seeded, and pitching rotations. And pitching rotations are very important for that first kind of round, because you want to know, maybe there's a cheap kind of third starter who is going to get two starts during that round. You can start to work that into your process and realize that, you know, maybe he's not the best, but he's getting two starts just the way that the schedule lines up. And that's a very powerful thing to leverage in round one. So I would say when you're a week out, take half an hour and just kind of, you know, look at where the rotation's at, how our team's going to try and set things up for the playoffs. And just like you would for, you know, DFS or season long leagues, the beat reporters are very good at this for the most part. And they know how these things are going to go. I think it was last year, the best example that we had was essentially the Jays had it lined up. So they were going to go Gausman game 1. And then they had this option in game 2 based on if they won or lost. And they were going to go two different ways. And that was going to give you either Berrios, who pitched, or Kikuchi, who was gonna maybe a little bit off the wall, but would have pitched if they didn't need to win the game. So just kind of listen to what the beat reporters are saying, because these teams are relatively transparent about what they're gonna do with their pitchers. So just kind of keep an ear to the ground and focus on where you can pick up, you know, a little edge here, a little edge there.
Yeah, I think that's very good. And even look at the teams talking about, you know, these three guys might be long guys type situation, because Think of the Astros, for instance. They have like six or seven guys that could technically be starting pitchers. Verlander technically counts as a starting pitcher right now, if you want. But I wouldn't draft Verlander to save my life. But I'm just saying, like, you got Hunter Brown, you got Arrigetti, Blanco. There's so many options there. And Framber, of course, the god of underdog because of his quality starts, just machine. Amazing. So they have so many options. And like that's a team, I know we keep saying it. If you draft the Astros, another team, just draft like four starting pitchers from the Astros and walk away type thing and just enjoy the rest. But yeah.
There's also like there is now a very real trend in Major League Baseball that I would say smart teams in the playoffs know that maybe your best leverage reliever is going to be more effective once you get to the third time through the order for a starter. So even these like best guys don't get to face that very often. So just have that in the back of your mind that, you know, leashes are shorter and smart teams sometimes do weird things with the rotations and the way they set up their pitching. So just be like flexible and ready to pay attention when they tell you what they're going to do.
100%. That is a great, great point. All right, before we head out of here, I'm going to go over the one question that we do have, but I think we answered it all. So I just want to make sure. Bullpen guru, our buddy Dom, he says the ideal roster construction, we hit on that. Do you target stacking one team? Hit on that. And is it crazy to target two teams with first round buys? Kind of.
Kind of. Yeah. That's one that I don't think I have a very good answer to. And my answer is kind of, you know, hopefully it doesn't happen, but I would love for people to kind of bat this idea around with me. If you think to buy teams make the World Series, then how do you want to draft? I would love to hear from people on kind of what their ideas are. I think you take a third team and then maybe try and build and get lucky for that. But I would love to hear some, you know, creative thoughts on how we think we can work through that scenario.
I'm with you. I think you load up on your team you think is getting through with kind of like 4-2 or something. The other one, like that's an interesting way to go about it. That's what's fun about this. It's a puzzle. It's 4D chess.
It is baseball with a heavy, heavy dose of game theory, which I really like.
Yeah, so do I. I'm not the most technically savvy guy. I joke I'm a caveman. I can't tell you how to use a spreadsheet to save your life. Like I love people like you that put it together for me and I can figure it out. But this kind of game theory I can think about. Like I enjoy this kind of stuff. Making it all articulate, probably not as well, but I can at least, you know, when I got it, the phone in my hand to draft, I can figure things out. And that is all I need. But all right, Chris, before we head out of here, let the listeners know. I know you and Sheep have another show coming up this week. Maybe you already recorded it. It just hasn't dropped yet. I'm not sure, but you have another one coming up and maybe anything else you have going on because your stuff's awesome, man. I know I've said it many times, but it's really good stuff.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Bob. And it was always a pleasure to come on and talk baseball with you. This is my favorite contest of the year. So me and Sheep have done a show already about kind of the overview of the contest and high-level strategy stuff. And then right after this, we're recording part two, which is going to be a little more team-by-team. He knows the player pool very well and is very like in tune with, you know, who is going to be in the lineup, who's going to be in the rotation. That's definitely a him strength and a me weakness. So we're going to try and put that together with some of my overall thoughts and see where we can find, you know, team by team edges. That show will be out maybe tomorrow. We'll see how that works on Stacking Dingers. You can find us at stackingdingers.com as our kind of Substack and YouTube channel. And then at some point in the next week or so, I have promised the Badge Bros on Underdog that we are going to do a pennant stream. I'm going to get on there with them and coach them through some drafts. So those guys, John and Nez, who love playing underdog, you know, baseball during the regular season, we're going to get them in the pennant streets and start drafting those soon too.
Awesome. That's what we need, more baseball underdogs, people. Let's go. Let's do it. Let's have some fun because it is a blast. And I know it's growing. I'm not gonna say it's not, obviously. Look at this contest this year. It's better than it was last year, but we need to keep it going. And people like you help move that ship. So I appreciate it. And for the listeners, you know, I have the Bubba and the Bloom show next Tuesday. Sheep's joining us to do some live drafts. So just throwing that one out there for everybody, a little tidbit for that. But again, make sure you follow Chris on Twitter at B3IsBall, still one of the best Twitter handles out there because you have to be a baseball fan to appreciate that. And then the Stacking Dingers podcast. But again, man, thanks for joining me, and we'll do it again sometime.
Appreciate it. Can't wait.
Everybody, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 689. Catch you all later.